The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome to the True Wealth Show on this, the greatest Tuesday you've had all week. I am David Little John in studio with me today.
Matt Dixon.
Matt.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people to fool.
There
That's
is.
All I'm saying. We've started early with conspiracy theories. It's not going to be the theme of the show, but sometimes it's just too fun to, like, all right.
This is why you go and listen to the podcast.
Yeah, because it'll
the
be
show. You get all
afterwards.
Those really good pieces that you missed.
Yeah, you get the stuff at the gaps, and because radio shows are interesting, right? Because in some ways, we want to keep a theme for the show, right? But some of you guys listening right now, you're not going to be here at 4 o'clock. Right, or
nope.
I'm sorry, 5
We're
o'clock.
Catching
right?
you for 15 minutes
yeah,
on the way
gonna
home.
Yeah, you're going to get like that little stretch. You're in the car going somewhere, or you're out working out, or whatever you're doing and you're listening, but you're just catching this for a little bit. And then you got other stuff to do. So we're trying to give you something decent. And, you know, but there's a whole lot we cover. And it usually ties together.
What are the early listeners going to get? And what happens if you stick around for the whole show? What are you going to get at the end?
Okay, well, first of all, some of it is like Matt's theory on whether or not we landed on the moon. That was a fun discussion. I feel like our listeners deserve to be part of this.
Okay.
Even though it strangely can be spun to be a little bit about investment, right? I can do this, right?
Well,
it's not
like
as crazy as you think.
Let's watch.
As you think. The other one is, we talked about the bathtub theory of money.
Okay.
I made this theory up, by the way, so if you want to know it, you have to listen to the show.
So you're saying
my theory.
We're going
to
give you something you can't find on Google.
Yeah, yeah. So the bathtub theory, okay,
right.
That's the Dave Little John bathtub theory. So, although I'm sure other advisors have used it, other clients have heard it before, so maybe they've shared it. So it's out there, but I'm totally claiming it.
Okay.
Right. And, you know, there's another one. This is a killer question of the day that we want to kind of angle toward, right? Which is, hey, I'm getting older, so I should change how risky I am as an investor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Question mark, question
and
mark.
And the answer is
maybe. Yeah.
And you can make a whole show out of maybe.
Yeah,
sure.
I live in that maybe
Well,
zone.
Here's it. Hey, did we land on the moon, Matt?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Oh, look at all the show. So, maybe.
No. Oh, no.
Okay, so first of all, for the fun of it,
yeah.
Like, why are some of the reasons that you're suspicious?
I just look
about
at...
About the moon landing.
I just look at, like, the technology that we had at that time period in history, and then I'm like, so you were able to get this thing up off the ground, shoot it into space, land it on the moon, and come home? Like, I don't know.
Yep.
Like, for the year, that seems pretty
spectacular.
Well, here's the bigger piece, though.
Okay.
Right? Like, I used this analogy right before we came on air. I'm like, hey, if one person climbs the top of Everest, everyone else is going to want to go there and see it because it's spectacular, right? And so I'm like, going to the moon.
It's funny because I'm over here going like, I have no desire to go to the top of Everest. I've actually used that as an example before. If I don't have a drive to go to the top
right.
of Everest.
But like, there's so many people that do, right?
Right.
Like, the world is full of those people.
Somebody else went or because somebody else, like, is that what did it? Like, it's not about being first. It's just about like, well, it's the highest place. Let's do that.
Right. Well, I look at the moon and I'm like, that was like for the longest time this spectacular thing that's like, well, we got to get there, we got to do it.
But
and then
remember some of the all right, so I'm going to play counterpoint with you for a second.
Sure.
Why did we want to get there?
It was just the race to see who could get there first,
right?
Yeah.
It was basically it was like Rocky, right?
Right,
where we had to, it was the Cold War. And it was like, who's going to win? All right, it's the Olympics in the 80s, right? It's all about Russia and the United States.
Right.
And it was basically bragging rights. You know, it was a measuring contest, and that became the Everest. Like,
right.
Fine, who's going to the moon? And we're like, Russia was going to do it? And so we were like, no, we're going to do it. And then crazy, who put the first person in space? Russia.
Yeah.
Right?
That sounds
and
right.
So after that, the United States had to be like, well, shoot, how are we going to have them hold our beer?
Yeah.
Right? So what's... Well, they already put somebody in space. We got to top that. Well, we'll go to the moon. Right? And so we did that, and now, and then it was like, well, the Cold War ended, so now what? Why go to the moon?
Well, I mean, 1969, right?
Yeah.
Moon landing. So it's been how many years? 50...
Some odd.
Yeah, yeah, 50 some odd years. I'm like, you're telling me in 50 some odd years, no one's been back? Like, no, like nothing in the world happens just one time if it's spectacular. It happens again and again and again. And I'm like, there's got to be some billionaire rich enough if it's like possible, right? That's like, you know what? I want to be the second person on the moon. Send me there.
Like, what if it's not spectacular?
It has to be.
Does it?
Yes. If people are that enthralled with just hiking the tallest mountain in the world, like you go to outer space and you can claim that
I'm thinking differently about like
you're the second group that's landed on the moon. Everyone wants to like think about it.
You're talking billions of dollars now,
right?
Which means the number of people that can access it is minuscule, right? And the big thing is, why would governments that are already in debt do this?
Well, doesn't just have to be governments. Could be
that's
private.
True, but if it's a for-profit organization, what is the profit in getting to the moon?
There is no profit in it.
Ah!
So, I mean, you can make that argument, but I think some of it is bragging rights, right? Like, why did Elon Musk buy Twitter? It wasn't for the financial profit.
I think it might have been.
You really think so?
Well, so you want to hear my real theory on this?
That it was actually for profit.
No,
he realized that it wasn't for profit and he still bought it anyway.
Tactical capital losses. Buy a company.
Maybe.
And then have it drop in value, change its name, reorg it, and then you have a potential capital loss. I don't know how he's navigating the taxes, but he has massive stock options in Tesla. So he needs offsetting losses in order to manage the gains if
and
he
so
wants
he just,
to liquidate.
Yeah, bought
and
it
so
for
you
the
can
novelty.
Do that, and then you get yourself an advertising platform because the one thing he's figured out is all the billionaires that stay billionaires get advertising platforms. Think about it. Bezos and the Washington Post, Zuckerberg and Facebook and Instagram, right? Bloomberg
needs a
right,
yeah.
Icon, like all these guys have massive media distribution scenarios behind.
True.
Them. Okay,
true.
So Musk,
and he was getting censored, and he was ticking him off. So
what do you do?
Buy
yourself
it at a loss.
A giant media outlet.
Yeah, I mean that does make sense.
Yeah. Anyway, so I don't know that it is without some financial, you know, tactics involved that occurred.
Yeah.
You know, when you say, I don't care if we make a profit, you know, how could you say that? Are you insane? And it's like,
well, he makes enough
but if
money
I make the loss,
yeah.
I actually offset the gains elsewhere, and then I don't pay the bazillions in capital gains taxes the same way.
And you get the use out of the company.
Yes.
Yeah. Wouldn't be crazy for
and
him to do something like that.
And what if it doesn't turn into a loss? Oh, okay. Well, I just made even more bazillions,
mm-hmm.
right? So I think they play a different game at that level.
That's
and,
true.
And if you need to fight the government, and the government has shown, and this isn't just an Elon Musk thing, but like, what do you do if you're Elon Musk when the government, like one of the things that I heard a recent scenario where it's like, oh, well, you need to hire, or specifically, you cannot hire illegal labor, right? You know, we need to protect American jobs, but then the U.S. government sues saying you must hire refugees that were crossing the border, right? And I'm like, wait, that's two conflicting orders.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we do, right? So you have to break the law and you have to uphold the law. Go. I don't know how to do that, right? And so what you can do is then media organizations can blast them and you have no say in how to counter that unless you have your own massive distribution hub
right.
yourself and it's global. And oh, you put your own satellite network in place with the ability to distribute the message too so they can't even bar you off the internet because you are the internet. Okay, I mean, it's a lot of power, and so one has to question,
yeah.
Is he Dr. Evil or Zorg or whatever? Like, I don't know. Hope not.
It's too hard to tell. We never get enough of the real story.
Yes. And so my simple theory on the moon, Matt, is it's how could you get that many people to lie at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how could you pull off that big of a cover-up? Because my joke is, like, you know, I can't cover up a lie on my own I learned a long time ago, it's easier to just tell the truth, then you don't have to remember the lie. But it turns out there's subjectivity in communication, right? Like, you and I could hear the same thing and hear a different message in it. You're like, what? You know? And so it's goofy, but hey, was the glass half full or half empty? Same glass.
Right.
Okay, so those little things, I don't know how you can coordinate that many people. And NASA had a lot of people working for it. How many people were in Florida and saw a rocket go up into the sky? Right? I mean, like, they saw these things really happen. You tell me you got like tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people to simultaneously lie about it? And they kept it together? Just saying, looks hard.
Maybe so.
Yeah, but should we go back? You ready for the investment spin?
Yeah.
NASA did some things, like when private companies don't have an incentive to invest in something, or the research and development is so expensive it's not worth it because it's too unreliable, this is where governments can play an actual role. NASA goes and pioneers certain technologies in space that SpaceX then turns around and perfects it much cheaper, right? SpaceX gets to learn the lessons that nobody would learn if the government wouldn't finance research and development. I think that there are some merits to this even in the fields of things like medical study, right? Sometimes there's no money in it for the private sector to solve something. Like, you couldn't get aspirin approved today probably because it's made from tree bark, right? And it's like you can't patent it, and it's like, well, I would never get through the FDA or, you know, whatever governing bodies we have. But it exists because it's been in existence for so long. And so, but nobody tries to really knock off aspirin. It's like, well, you know, here's your aspirin, right? And that's that. How do you incentivize a company that's going to have to spend $1 billion to get something through the government channels? That's a serious pucker factor to get investors to do that, right? And so there are scenarios where maybe a corporate investment by the government isn't crazy. The question is, how do we keep the incentives aligned so that government stays sort of on track and on budget and doesn't sort of get spun out of control with even a small bit of corruption can sort of turn the whole thing
down? Is that even possible, though? Because the government always seems to figure out a way to screw it up.
I don't know.
Or to overspend or to get corrupt.
Look, you got 100 people in this world. You're going to have, you know, a handful of them in that group that are just willing to
do whatever,
prey on the others.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 100%.
And so if any of them end up in government with that attitude, and remember, it's always easier to spend somebody else's money without accountability, right? Sure. I mean, it's always easy to say, well, you know, rich people should pay their fair share. If you're not rich and you don't define fair, it's really easy to say that, right? Because like, they're all subjective terms and it's just not applicable to you.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so there's our take on the moon landing in the first segment, which ran long because we do that.
Did it already run long?
Yeah, we're already into this thing. So here's what we do. We tell our listeners that when we come back, we're going to talk about risk tolerance. Like, is this a load of garbage? Is it stupid? Like, why do investment folks always talk about risk tolerance? What does it really mean? Do you even care?
Okay. You should.
Well, probably should, but it may not be the same as you think, and we're going to explain why when we come back.
Let's
stick around.
It.
I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
Yeah, True Wealth. On News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. I know we're live. I've got to just push the button.
This is
what we get for, like, hey, the music turned off. Come back on. Welcome back to the True Wealth Show. We're fussing with the cameras, guys. Sorry. All the different things that we try to do to make the show look okay when it's videoed, and it's radio, right?
Mm-hmm.
So video is killing the radio star.
Yeah.
Precisely. Glad we had that talk, too. Matt, I promised our listeners, if you're just joining us, you missed why we think the lunar landing was controversial. We're not even settled on did it or didn't it happen. I think it happened. But, you know, story for another time. Talk to me a little bit about, first of all, in investing, one of the number one questions that professionals always ask is, what is your risk tolerance?
Right.
Can you please help our listeners understand what in creation we're talking about.
Yeah, so when I think about risk, I think about what type of up and down swings can you experience in the like actual dollar value of your account, right?
Volatility.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that volatility piece. And historically, you know, if you take a little bit more risk, you should experience a little bit more reward for that risk that you're taking. Now, does it always play out that way? No. Because sometimes even your quote-unquote lower risk investments can become volatile during weird times and, you know, you experience more of a loss than you would expect. But is it a loss? It depends on your time horizon and are you holding that investment? Are you selling that investment?
Well, let's start nuancing definitions.
Yeah.
Like, who would do such a thing?
We would.
Not on this program. We are going to give it to you as... Well, we're going to give it to you with the language the investment industry gives you, and then we're also going to unpack it for you so you know what the heck it means, right? Or we're going to try to. So what I heard you say, Matt, is part of risk is understanding how much an investment may go up or down in value.
Yeah.
Okay? And you talked a little bit about gain or loss, whether or not it was realized or not, which also suggests a little bit of timing of when you might sell something or not. And it also suggests whether or not you're going to realize a capital gain. This, by the way, is very relevant in today's political landscape. One of the proposals of the Harris campaign is a possible tax on unrealized capital gains. Now, for most folks, it probably doesn't come into play
yet.
And so, and I'm not even sure that it would be legal, which is probably good. That's not the purpose of today's show. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole too far. I'm just going to tell you, you should know what this means. Back to the risk scenario. So you're you also told me, Matt, that sometimes investments that seem to be low risk or low volatility aren't low volatility. Talk to me a little more about that. What do you mean?
Well, so typically you would look at, and this is just generalizing, so don't take this as advice or whatever, but you know, you would typically look at kind of the stocks as maybe a little bit more higher risk than something like a bond, right? Where you're just lending your money out with the expectation that you're going to get paid back. But lately, what we've seen is a lot of volatility, a lot of changes in manipulation to interest rates, right? Like we just got a rate cut. And when you see the Fed coming in and changing interest rates, that can add volatility to your bond holdings.
Okay.
And so that's been kind of a change lately.
Yeah. It's interesting to me because I would take it even a step beyond that, right? Volatility sort of mirrors conditions in the market. There are times when the entire stock market experiences a little bit lower volatility in aggregate, right?
Yeah.
Any individual position may behave independently. But in aggregate, you look at the whole of, you know, sort of averaging everything together, and you go, well, sometimes the markets are more calm, more peaceful,
if you will. And we've seen it now for a little bit, right? Like 2023, the markets were way up. 2024, the markets have been way up. And so we've experienced this, you know, kind of long ride of just things moving higher and higher and higher in the markets. And so, you know, we have risk tracking software that looks at that and tries to give it a value on that scale of like 0 to 100. So 0 being really low risk and 100 being really high risk. And what's been an interesting trend is we've seen these big tech companies that might have historically been higher risk stocks kind of go down on their risk scores and get lower scores recently. And it's because for a while now they have performed really well and they've done nothing but go up.
Well,
so it's kind of like
paint a picture for our listeners
risk
so that this makes sense, right? Because we're tiptoeing into the deep end of the pool when we start talking about how risk has changed. So first, let me give you a visual of what this might be. One of the tools out there that scientists use to measure earthquakes is called a seismograph, right? And they bolt it into the sort of the bedrock of the earth, and then if an earthquake occurs, the the vibrations register as a scale. Normally, it's there's just sort of a drum of paper that's rolling, right? This drum is rolling along, and there's a needle on there. And then if it starts to vibrate, that needle will start to spike. And it's like watching, maybe you've seen a radio wave or something else. It looks pretty flat, and then it'll start to bounce up and down as that line is being drawn, okay? So if you can picture that in your mind, you're drawing a line from left to right across the page, and it's a flat line, and then you hit a spike, and you start making big swings up and down on the page instead of left and right on the page. Okay, the up and down, the amplitude of that swing up and down is kind of what volatility means. And what you've just suggested to me, Matt, is we've had investments that usually look like fairly flat lines. They move up and down a little bit, but they've been fairly flat. And then something changes, and all of a sudden they start to spike up and down, almost like an earthquake effect on those positions. And we're not necessarily measuring these stocks minute to minute. We're talking about over the course of months.
Right.
But we saw the opposite. We saw big tech companies that used to have kind of big oscillations, and they've sort of calmed down. And
they've been calm for what, a year and a half or more?
Yeah. And so I just paint this picture for our listeners to give you a sense of the behavior, if you were to look at a chart, has changed, right? They are behaving much more calmly lately. But do we believe that that is their nature?
Yeah. Is the volcano actually dormant, or is it just dormant for a period?
Right. Because I don't believe that the nature of a high-tech company has changed to be low volatility.
No. It all just comes down to where's the order flow, right? And by that I mean, are people buying it, selling it? Or, you know, like what are people doing? What's the behavior? And lately the behavior has largely been, well, I want to make money. I'm a little bit greedy. Let's just buy the big tech company because AI is going to change the world. And so if you get just a ton of buyers and not very many sellers, I mean, that's what you're going to get.
And there's something else that isn't as frequently talked about on these programs. This is, we really are wading into the deep end of the pool now when you start talking about these concepts. And so for a lot of you out there, this isn't terribly relevant. It's interesting to know, but you don't need to know how it works. It's just kind of, it's sort of like, I don't need to know how the car's engine works. Some of you do, but I know that if I put gas in it and I turn the key, it should go, right? We have seen an explosion in the derivatives marketplace. Okay, these are options for the, and if you know what that means, great. If you don't, it's not owning the actual stock in a company. It's owning a contract that grants you the right to purchase the stock for a period of time, and that option will expire, right? So you're buying the right to buy it at a price, and then for a period of time. And that behavior also influences the stock, because what you're doing is you're saying, I now have potential demand for that position, either the demand to buy it or the demand to sell it, right? And so that also influences, and it does so because here's the unique thing about options. They are leveraged by their very nature. So you can use a little bit of money to control a block of stock that's bigger than the money you put in. And so if you do that, right, let's say I want to control 100 shares of stock. The stock is $1 a share, so it would be $100 to buy that 100 shares. I might be able to buy an option for $3 or $4.
Right.
But control all 100 shares.
Yeah, and so that pendulum kind of swings both ways.
Yeah,
if you're...
it magnifies things. And so it's interesting to see that we've actually found those big companies with even more interest almost are competing in the opposite of what you'd expect. They've persisted with lower volatility, even with greater derivative activity.
And a lot of that, I think, comes back to what I just mentioned before, greed.
Like, right.
If you can keep this thing chugging along in the right direction, you're going to make a crazy amount of money.
Well, I'm going to say, too, the interesting thing is there's a lack of gray hair that is really interesting. And what I'm talking about is how many people delved into the marketplace in the COVID era when they didn't have a whole lot else to do.
Right.
So they were at home. And what do? Well, I can't go out and I can't spend the money. So why don't I start playing in the stock market and enter the likes of Robinhood and so forth? And folks start to go in and buy these things, but not necessarily as traditional investments, but more like speculative instruments.
That might be part of the reason why Warren Buffett's been so cash heavy lately. He's looking at this and being like, man, you know, like if everyone's going to keep being greedy, at some point the greed and the like, can it work forever?
Probably not.
Well, and we saw just a little tiny glimpse, I think, of this derivatives marketplace that you just talked about kind of falter when that
the,
when we talked
the
about that
Japan carry trade was unwinding,
right? Because people
just
had
a few
to,
weeks ago, if you recall,
people like these options traders had to pay up on their money that was due. Stuff was down and caused this mass panic sell that took the entire stock market and dropped it about 10% in just a matter of what, 2 days or something.
Yeah, it was fast.
And so it's like that's a pretty big correction for a short period of time, and since it's rallied higher, but still, you know, you start swimming in the deep end of the pool, you can really change things in a hurry.
Yeah. So all of this to say, now we've kind of talked about what the market, how we're looking at risk in this case. Remember, risk has lots of different definitions. Okay.
Yep.
But the definition that we're talking about today as an investor is, what is your tolerance for volatility?
Right.
The willingness to allow your investments to swing up and down. A conservative investor would want minimal variability in their principal.
Right. Like
value,
they're not
going
to sleep if their account goes down.
Yeah, they
10%.
Want, look, I had $1,000 in this account, and when I wake up tomorrow, I want it to say $1,000 or higher, right? I don't want to risk it saying 960. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's an investor that wants very stable returns. That's going to come with a low tolerance for volatility. We would call that low risk. OK, so is that right, wrong, or otherwise?
It depends on a few things.
It depends is the answer. And if you want to know what it depends on, well, now you have to wait for us to come back after our next evil corporate profit break.
Okay.
All right. Stick around, everybody. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
And you're back. Yeah, don't say whatever you want now.
PC filter activated.
Exactly. We're all joking. And welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Matt and I were teasing at the break about you pull your punches a little less on a podcast because it's...
No, more. Like, you pull a lot more punches on the podcast.
Well, you could throw more punches. I'm saying, like, I'm thinking of, like, you know, in Hollywood, when you pull a punch, it's like it's a fake punch, right? You're not really going to hit them.
Okay.
And so it looks like it, though. You're like, you pulled your punches. You looked like it looked fake, right? And so you pull your punches. Like, I guess I walk a little bit more line of diplomacy with things like politics. Believe it or not, I'm not as partisan as I used to be. But I am, like... I just don't put up with nearly as much crap when somebody's like, well, what about this idea? And I'm like, yeah, you don't have very good data. It just frustrates me, you know?
Yeah.
I'm yet to find anybody that can tell me why a tax on unrealized gains is anything other than I don't like rich people and I think that it's okay to screw them. Like, if that's where your position is, just own it. But quit trying to be like, well, we shouldn't tie the wealth up in this way.
The position is, I don't care about the American people. I care about myself and padding my own government's pocketbooks.
So I don't think it's that fancy. I think there's a lot of people that actually are not cool with people having that much money. Right? Like, when you talk about Elon Musk, they're like, I don't care if he's a nice guy or a jerk or anything. It's like, nobody should have that much money. And then you kind of go, well, how much money is okay? And it's like, well, I don't have an answer, but that's too much.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so so it's okay because, you know, they make choices that I disagree with, whatever it is. But it comes down to, like,
if you take away the ability for someone to have an unlimited amount of money, you just killed the American dream. Think about it. The American dream is you work hard, you can strike pay dirt, you know, and do something phenomenal, and you basically can have an unlimited amount of resources. Where, I mean, where else can you really do that? So there's very few places in the world where you can pull that off. And for the people who are like, well, you know, Elon shouldn't be able to have that much money, to them, I'm like, well, you can go try a socialist or communist country.
Yeah.
You know, go for it.
I mean, not the show I wanted to turn it into today. I'm just, because it makes it like, I like to counterpoint with you, Matt.
Yeah.
Not because I don't always disagree with you on this stuff. Like, largely, here's my take, though, on the system, right?
Yeah.
You design a system that this is just how it works for everybody. What generally pisses me off is the government picking winners and losers.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That generally bothers me. And, like, maybe you could find circumstances where it's like, well, what about this? I'm like, well, all right. I mean, you can paint really weird exceptions. But I don't like this idea of, like, well, the system works for – it works this way unless you make too much money, and then we weaponize the system against you. And, yeah, you realize when I call it weaponized, like, I'm totally seeding the conversation. But what else is it?
Yeah.
Right? You're basically saying the system is okay until the majority – disagrees
yeah.
with it. And then, because really the ultra wealthy are a minority group, they have a lot of power because they can influence the people making the rules, right? So I get it. But what are you trying to say? The whole reason that we created the United States in the first place was so that minority rights were protected.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're effectively saying is, a lot of people right now are saying weird stuff like, we should get rid of the Electoral College. And I'm like, so you can stop having minority rights protected. Is that what you're saying? No, I'm saying that, you know, if the people wanted to vote, it's different. Democracy's different today. We didn't have the same technology. And this side of the air, I say, none of those things are different. Right? Human nature hasn't changed. Technology has.
Right.
Okay? So, like, just let's not play that game. Anyway, way derailed on this one. I just wanted to talk about risk. And now I'm talking about, like, philosophically how we're strangling the American dream, like, in a classroom trying to tell people that they're victims instead of there's a bunch of opportunity in front of them. Like, come on, people. This is the greatest country ever.
What did you want to say about risk?
I'll tell you what I want to say about risk.
Throw it out there.
There's two kinds of risk, and we don't always measure it the right way when it comes to how investors have to make decisions, right?
Well, start with risk A and risk B. What are the two types?
All right, risk A, the risk that you're comfortable taking. Like, everybody has kind of this natural barometer that
can
says,
be very different from
it's
the
very
risk
subjective.
That you should take.
Well, that's different. What's the risk that's – so maybe it's just three, right? The risk that you're comfortable with, the risk that you can afford to take,
mm-hmm.
and then the risk that you need to take.
Yeah, so three.
Okay,
yeah.
There's three. So what are they, right?
Mm-hmm.
The risk that you're comfortable with. Yeah, it's kind of self-explanatory. I'm kind of okay with this range of returns.
Right.
Now, it turns out everybody has the same answer until you make them give the real answer. Right? What's the risk you're okay with? I don't want to lose any money and I want to make a ton of money.
Yeah.
Like, yes, that's actually not risk. That's unicorn land. Right? Like, I want only upside with no downside. I want S&P 500 returns, zero downside. And some person somewhere is like, well, I have this insurance annuity thing that does exactly that. To which I respond, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Right? If
there
you
is
really
no free
honestly
lunch.
Have
There's
that,
no free lunch.
Show it to me. Because I can't conjure a way to give you unlimited upside and no downside.
No.
There's no way I know to conjure it. And an insurance company, if they can't profit
well, think
off of
about
you, they don't
if
do it.
If it was real, wouldn't everyone be doing
100%,
it?
100%. Right?
Yeah.
There's a cap somewhere in it. They will cap the upside of the S&P 500. You will get S&P indexed returns with a cap.
Right. So if the market's up 26% and the
you're
cap
capped
is 12%.
At
8. Yeah.
You got 8 and everything above that the insurance company captured to use to pay for the guarantees that they're
profit,
giving you.
Profit, yeah.
Because the next year when the S&P is down 16 and you're flat, they are making up the difference.
Right.
And they also lock you into the thing for years so that you can't leave without paying penalties.
Wait, so you're saying there's a reason that insurance companies have big buildings?
I'm saying there's a reason insurance companies have big buildings.
Okay.
Right? Because big buildings buy confidence.
There you go. That's what we need. We just need a really big building. We saw that happen in Parks and Recreation. Did you ever watch that show?
Oh, that's a great show.
Where Tom's like, all right, I got this business idea. But
right,
first,
with Detlef Schrempf.
Yeah, and he's like, we just need a really big building. The business will follow.
Right.
Spend like $100,000 a month just to have an NBA basketball player
hanging out in there. Like, what are we doing here? Who cares, man?
Yeah.
They're coming. The clients are coming. It's like, just look cool and it will work.
The bucket of cash when people walk in. Just take some cash.
Right.
That's our government. Oh my gosh, that's literally our government.
Oh no. Oh,
yeah.
No.
There's the analogy for you.
Matt's he's making metaphors again from Parks and Rec.
You want a $25,000 down payment for a house because you don't qualify for one? Just walk into the building. We'll give you a bucket of cash. Please vote for us.
Yeah. What could go wrong?
Yeah.
Right? What could possibly go wrong? The American dream is handouts. Got it.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I'm never going to look at that episode the same way. I'm just going to see the...
We're good in the first place.
Just going to see...
If you haven't seen the show, it's actually hysterical.
Yeah.
Right?
And then he comes in and... what was the guy's name that's dating... Ben. Ben walks in, who's an accountant, and he's like, can I see your books, you know? And they're like, yeah, we need a little bit of help. And he's like, oh my gosh, you're going to run out of money in like 30 days. Like, you got to shut this down. What? I can see our government doing that too. Like,
yeah.
You're saying we're out of money?
Money printing go brr. Oh no. Or it was so off the rails. I'm sorry, listeners. Three kinds of risk.
Forget
regroup, I'm having fun.
Three
kinds of risk, right? The amount of risk you're willing to tolerate, the amount of risk that you are capable of tolerating, and then the amount of risk that you need to take, okay? What is the amount you're capable of, Matt?
I mean, you're capable of taking as much as you want, but...
Well, that's your tolerance, right? But, I mean, what do you think we mean?
You got to look at how much... You're able to, like, how much are you spending each month, right? And you're still over there just losing it. I hope you guys catch the podcast.
Where the hell is this show going? Oh my gosh. No, go on, Matt. This is great.
Yeah. So, how much risk can you take? Really talking about how. Am I going to run out of money, right? Like, because if you take a bunch of risk and you're pulling a ton of money out of your accounts and the market's down 20%, well, that doesn't pencil, potentially, yep. Right? And so you got to kind of look at where the guardrails are and say, if I, you know, kind of maybe make 6% or my account's maybe down 10%, I'm fine. So you're trying to gauge it. You're trying to be in some guardrails.
All right.
That's the best I can give you. Because my mind is completely on a whole nother subject.
So, we're just going to write our own permit on a piece of notebook paper here, and then we're going to take a break.
Okay? I think we should.
Let's take our last break. When we come back, we're going to regroup, and I'm going to tell you a little story to help explain risk.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about the bathtub, I promise.
We need the break.
Stick around. We'll be back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
Yeah, True Wealth. On News Radio, 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You can't. No. Another show.
I almost got you.
Another show.
I almost got you.
A different show than this one. And we
trying
can talk
to
about
bait
that.
You down the.
No. No. We're talking about risk. Welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with the distraction today.
Yes. That's what
and,
I'm here for.
This is the final segment. And so we're going to sum this up super fast. If you have stayed with us this long, I don't know if I should congratulate you or apologize. But I can tell you, it was supposed to be the show about risk. And here's the whole reason this came up, why I was thinking about it. So a buddy of mine who's getting a little older says to me, you know, they tell me that I should get more conservative as I get older. And then he says, but I probably won't. I know what I've been doing this for a long time. It doesn't bother me that the markets go up and down. I don't lose any sleep over it. And I don't really know why I would change my investment strategy now just because, but it occurred to me, people get this message all the time. And should you change your risk tolerance? meaning like, should you adapt your investment strategy as you get older? And the answer is, it depends. But it depends on what? And we talk about these three kinds of risk, right?
Right.
What do we say, Matt? How much risk you can
tolerate.
Right?
Yeah. What are you going to sleep at night with?
Right.
And then how much can you afford to take?
Uh-huh.
And then how much should you take?
Right. And so the tolerate's really just the one that's like, well, when you see your statements and they go up and down in value, do you care? Like if it goes
right.
down and you freak out, okay, you have a low tolerance for risk because it gives you indigestion, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one. Then, but can you afford it? Another one.
Yeah.
Right? Because this is the idea of, well, what if the markets had a 50% correction? And it said, well, what if that happened and my investments were cut in half and you still had more than enough money? This is a case where, well, you know, all of my needs are met by pensions,
mm-hmm.
right? I actually don't rely on my investments for income. They're just an asset to me.
Well, if that's the case, then you could afford to take more risk.
Absolutely, because you could essentially afford to lose it.
And it might be smarter to, right? Over a long enough period of time.
Well,
because
it would be more profitable. So, you know, so it kind of depends. But that's a natural segue into the last component of this, right?
Right.
And that is, what should you be taking? And the should, again, comes with an asterisk because it sounds like advice, but here's why I'm framing it this way. I'm not advising you, but I'm telling you, be alert to this. If you need to hit a certain target rate of return and you go too conservative, you may miss.
Right.
And then you won't have enough, right? So you say, I need an 8% rate of return, but I'm investing in 3% CDs. You'll never get there.
Right.
Right? And so you are assuring that your plan will not work because you are unwilling to take enough risk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so the other thing that really messes with people is time horizon, right? The biggie is why time horizon is because markets, if they go down, they usually recover. Historically,
yeah.
they have over time. And so if you have enough time to ride something out, well, people tend to look at this and go, well, now that I'm retired, I don't have the time to recover. And I go, well, it depends. Are you going to die immediately in retirement?
Yeah.
Or are you still, you know, hey, it's 65, and you say, well, arguably, you still have a 15-plus year retirement time horizon.
You know, one of the mistakes I see the most often is younger people not taking enough risk early on. And it's not because they were not trying to. It's because they were uninformed and they didn't know.
Yeah, yeah. And so like, you end up in savings accounts instead of investment accounts.
Basically, yeah. And I mean, I even looked at like my wife's account, right, into her 401k. And I looked at it one day and I'm like, man, you've got all of this downside and half the upside. I'm like, you're not going to get anywhere if you stay in this fund. Changed it up. Things are working immensely better.
Yeah.
And it's like,
side note to employers out there right now, too. A lot of folks are unaware of this, but we do advise on 401k plans at the plan level. So if you're a plan sponsor and you are interested in that, this is as close to a sales pitch as you get. You know, we will still go through the same process of consulting, and if we can't add value, we'll let you know. But a lot of people are unaware that that's part of what we can help with is for plan sponsors that are trying to figure out, how do I offer something to my employees?
Yeah.
Right? So anyway, we back to the risk question. You know, that's a great example where we just have, our camera just crashed. It's a great example where changing the risk is going to improve the outcome. And, you know, you need to look at how that actually connects to your plan, right?
Mm-hmm,
so time horizon's connected, the amount of risk that you can tolerate, the amount of risk that you really ought to be taking. Here's the last thing. I told you about the bathtub theory, and I wanted to share this one. How do you address risk as an investor? Like, what do you do? What does it mean, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the simple answer is, what you select to invest in is how you address your risk tolerance, right? You match how aggressive your investments are to what you're looking for. So a conservative investor buys investments that have conservative profiles, okay? And an aggressive investor does the opposite, okay?
How does this relate to a bathtub?
Well, what I see a lot of the time is that people will sometimes in their mind say, well, I have this investment here,
okay,
and it's my aggressive investment, and then I have a conservative investment over here, and I have a cash over here, and I have some money in a cookie jar. And what people are doing is a mental accounting trick. It's gymnastics, right? They're saying, oh, well, this is my high-risk account and that's my low-risk account. I go, which dollars spend different?
Well,
which one has different purchasing power?
They can, depending on what type of account they are.
I
right?
Like
if it's your IRA and you're not going to touch it for 20 years versus maybe like a brokerage account where, you know, you're going to go use that money to buy an RV.
I'm just going to straight up, because of time, I'm going to politely disagree with you, Matt.
Really?
Yep, because the reality is that the difference is simply in an IRA, if you wanted to take the dollar out, you'd pay penalties for it. So you have to be understand what the cost to pull it out is.
Okay.
That dollar doesn't buy any more or any less. A dollar in your hand buys what a dollar buys.
Okay.
Whether that dollar lives in a bank vault or it lives in an investment account, a dollar of purchasing power is a dollar of purchasing power.
So and you so, almost look at it as like a blended risk. That
that's the reality is all of those buckets are sitting in the same bathtub. Okay, and so if you look at the risk across all of them, if I have a bucket of hot water and a bucket of lukewarm water and a bucket of cold water, and I dump them all into the bathtub together, every one of there's these, this water is dollars, right? Every one of those dollars, the purchasing power didn't change.
Mm-hmm.
The risk is what is the uniform temperature of the bathtub? Okay, and so you can do manual accounting and there's reasons to do it, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, this is my vacation fund. And so I know how much is there for that or how much for the car. The envelope system, if you will, a virtual envelope system, very good for budgeting. Okay, but very distracting for trying to understand the total risk that you've got in your investment strategy. So I think it's important. I'm not saying you can't do mental accounting and do buckets. What I'm saying is don't let it fool you into thinking you're a lower or higher risk investor because you have an account over here that you're willing to look at and the other one you're ignoring. Okay?
So you're saying you have to give them all the same attention.
I think all of them need to be considered
that
in
aggregate.
I can
get on board with.
The risk that you are taking is aggregated across all of the different investments that you're making. And that's what holistic planners look at. Okay? You know, if you're just looking at one account, then that's what you're going to assess, the risk of that account. But I think for good financial planning hygiene, you should be looking at everything because all of your money goes in one bathtub in the end.
Yeah, that part is true.
So there you go. That is the Dave Littlejohn bathtub theory is don't miss opportunities because you are measuring one bucket instead of taking a look at all of the buckets. And with that, I can tell you this. We're near the end of our time. And so the music's playing. We got to go. How do they reach us, Matt?
541-375-0898 or just go to our website at littlejohnfs.com. You can chat us or you can even text that phone number, whatever is easiest for you.
That's it. But if you don't have somebody, find them and it can always be us. We'll look forward to it. Until next time, you've been listening to True Wealth. We'll catch you later.